Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller. And Dr. David Scheel is the professor of marine biology at Alaska Pacific University. He has researched the behavior and ecology of the octopus for over 25 years. He starred with Heidi the octopus and his daughter Laurel in PBS's Octopus Making Contact. He lives in Anchorage, Alaska. He's got a tremendous new book out called Many Things Under a Rock, The Mysteries of Octopuses. And David Scheel joins us. David, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on your show, Randy.
I've got about 1,000 questions. I've been all over your book, and everything that I read, as I mentioned to you, probably 99% of the population doesn't know anything about an octopus. So for you to study them, what, 25 years now?
A little over that now, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it just brings so many things to light. For example, I had no idea there were, 300 different species?
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people are surprised about, is that, you know, we tend to talk about an octopus as though they're all the same. But there are 300 plus species in the continental shelf oceans, you know, just the sort of shallow part of the ocean, plus more in the deep sea, plus more species, maybe even in the pelagic waters. And so they can be different, and the differences can be interesting. There's some things they all have in common, and then they tend to each have something unique about them as well.
It's
a lot of room for fascination.
Yeah, and you mentioned that it's a lot of times tough to tell the male and the female apart.
It can be, yeah. Their behaviors sometimes differ, and that's something that I focus on. But anatomically, on the outside, the biggest difference is kind of looking for the tip of the third right arm, which then in the males will lack suckers all the way to the end. It has suckers at the base, but somewhere up along the end, it begins to be modified for passing sperm packets from the male to the female.
Yeah, I was talking to my wife about this last night, and we're huge animal lovers anyway. But her question was, I said, and he lives in Anchorage, Alaska. And she said, well, there are no octopuses in Alaska. And I said, well, no, you're dead wrong. But I mean, I think the majority that you mentioned are Alaska and Australia, right?
Well, you know, that's where my work has been. I worked on the animals in Alaska, and I've been privileged enough to have some colleagues who worked down in Australia and to be able to travel down there and work on some fascinating habitats and octopuses that are down there. So the book has a lot of Alaska and Australia in it, but, you know, there's a number of other species. I think I talk in at least a little bit of detail about 20 or more different species out of the 300. Those are the ones that tend to get mentioned the most, either because there's the most research done on them or because they have really captured the attention and there's not a lot of research done on them, but they're very, very odd looking creatures.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking to Dr. David Scheel here on the National Defense. His book, Many Things Under a Rock, The Mysteries of Octopuses. And that's one of the mysteries that you've solved for me, the plural of octopus. Octopi, octopuses, I guess it's octopuses.
Octopuses, that's correct. There's been some confusion over the years about that I ending, octopi. But basically, the word octopus draws from the Greek, and the I ending draws from the Latin, and there's no need to mix those.
Gotcha. Well, let's start with some of the basics here. First of all, how big do they get?
The world's largest species is the one I work on up in Alaska. It's the giant Pacific octopus. And it gets, up to 100 pounds. And then increasingly rarely, there are a few records above that limit. They get harder and harder to define what the largest size is. But, you know, a 100-pound octopus is a big animal.
Oh, man. Well, what do they eat? I read a section of your book where you describe in great detail an octopus trying to open a crab or a clam.
A clam, yeah.
And it took hours for this octopus to penetrate this crab. It was fascinating.
Yeah, that's a story I relate in many things under a rock, kind of to illustrate the different ways they have to try and get their prey open. Because if you think about it, it's a little bit weird. Here you have an octopus, which is a soft-bodied animal. It has no external shell. It's it has very few hard parts, just the beak, basically, which is its mouth part. And it's eating the most heavily armored animals in the sea. It's eating crabs and clams with these thick, hard shells, which is really kind of preposterous on the face of it. And so the story that I relate in many things under a rock is finding this clam shell. It's a butter clam, and it's a big animal. It's like, it's as big as a man's hand. Right. And, the clamshell, each half of the clamshell. And it's several centimeters thick, or several millimeters thick. It's like half a centimeter thick in its width. So it's really a hard shell. If I gave you one, you would have a hard time breaking it with your fingers, and on this shell, which I picked up from an octopus den, the octopus's first move is to attach with the suckers and pull. And that had obviously failed. And then there were these marks that the octopus had left. One of them we call a drill mark. And the drill mark is made by the octopus sort of rasping away at the shell. It kind of has a tongue that's a little bit like a file belt, a flexible belt with file with little teeth on it that it can scratch at it. And there were... I think there were 5 drill marks in different positions on this shell, each one of which probably took considerable time to drill, and none of them made it all the way through. None of them had worked. But the octopus had obviously killed this clam because I found it empty and clean inside an octopus den. And so finally I was able to find on this shell, right along the edges, a little chip mark where the octopus had managed to crack the shell at the edge where it was thinnest. And those are made by the beak. So the octopus has these sort of 3 different tools in its toolkit, pulling and stripping to drill and chipping to break. And it had tried all of them and finally got in with the beak.
Wow. I mean, that's a lot of effort and a lot of time to get some food. Do they not eat very often?
I don't, that was probably an exceptionally difficult clam to open. It was very large. Many of the things that they eat where I have seen them in Prince William Sound are much smaller prey, and they're probably able to get at them much more easily. And, we mentioned the work I do in Australia. There, the site that I visit is in this very rich scallop bed, and the octopuses seem to be able to leave their dens, go out from the dens just a short distance, grab up a few handfuls of scallops and carry them back under their arms to the den, and then sit in the den. And I don't think they spend any time at all opening the scallops. I think they're really easy. They just pull them open.
We're talking to Dr. David Scheel here in the National Defense. Many Things Under a Rock, The Mysteries of Octopuses is the book. Man, some great reviews for this book. And I loved one of the reviewers talking about things that you learn from this book about severed arms wincing with pain, octopuses throwing things at each other, octopuses seemingly standing sentinel over their octopus neighborhoods. Are they very community-oriented, or are they very familial?
Well, this is one of the things that we're still learning about. Not in the traditional sense that we think about with like chimpanzees or humans or even African lions. They're pretty solitary in the sense that we think about with those guys. But this site down in Australia, it's a site we've nicknamed Octopolis. And it's kind of a bed of discarded scallop shells. In the middle of a big silty habitat with no hard surfaces, no shelter, no dens. But in this one place where all the scallop shells have been discarded, the octopuses are using those scallop shells to stabilize the sediment, and they can dig out dens in that shell hash. Hmm. And so because the patch is so limited and the area is so dangerous, but there's so much food around, they all dig out their dens in this one very limited area. And that means that they kind of have to cope with one another. And so you get all, you get, you know, 15, 16 octopuses in this one spot, and they're having, they might, you know, the most active individuals might be having thousands of octopus interactions a day. And that's a lot of interaction. And, you know, so they're spending most of their time in a situation like that, kind of contending with their neighbors or coping with their neighbors. And I think that's pretty unusual for octopuses, but it's something that they're capable of doing, and that they're capable of doing that kind of argues against this notion of the solitary octopus that, you know, never gets together except to mate or for cannibalism.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask
kind of the other extreme.
Yeah, do they fight with each other, especially during mating season?
They do. They do seem to scuffle quite a bit. It's interesting. There are certainly records of octopuses eating each other, and it's usually very size based. So, in many things, there's a section on cannibalism, and I talk about one octopus chasing another one, but the chased octopus is very small, and the chasing octopus is very big.
Right.
And that seems to be the way octopus cannibalism happens. That's pretty common in the sea, that species all start out very, very small, you know, as little tiny eggs or larvae or paralarvae or baby fish or whatever. And then they can, some species like octopuses and tuna fish and whatnot, grow big, and they might prey on smaller cohorts of the same species. But what's interesting is in Jervis Bay at Octopolis, we see octopuses interacting all the time, but we haven't yet recorded any cannibalism. So they can be cannibalistic, but quite often they are interacting very frequently, scuffling, mating attempts, females pushing at other females over den maintenance, males evicting males and trying to control access to dens, and all these other fascinating kinds of interactions that don't involve just trying to catch and kill the other octopus.
Oh man, this is such fascinating stuff. I know that they change color as rapidly as they can move, which is unbelievable to me. I think I read where they change color when they see prey, and then they change color when they sleep. Wow.
Yeah, they have a system in their skin that's based on these little sacks of pigment. They're called chromatophores, and they can be, if they're relaxed state, they kind of hang very, very narrow, and they're not very visible from on the skin surface. But they're attached to little tiny muscles that can pull them out into a big flat disc that makes a spot of color on the skin. Mm. And so the octopus has a lot of these across its entire body. And then they're all controlled by these small muscular actions. And so the animal can change color in the blink of an eye, and by controlling which of these pigments are pulled out or not. And then octopuses also have the ability to erect small bumps or nodules or arches or whatever, various shapes in their skin that are called papillae. So they can pull up a bump or a little finger of skin and hold, so they can change their texture as
wow.
well. And so, and then they also can, you know, change their body pose. And so they use all three of these, the body pattern of the color, the body texture of the papillae, and then the body poses of the arms and everything to assume all kinds of shape and do all kinds of fascinating things, ranging from camouflage to mimicry of a different kind of animal to body displays that seem to be oriented towards one another for dominance or aggression or retreat, et cetera.
Wow. I mean, that is some cool stuff. How far down in the water are we talking about here where you find an octopus?
Well, a lot of my work, I was able to find them right in the intertidal at very low tide. So they range
really?
From very shallow. Yeah. And then, you know, the work in Australia, for example, and some of the work in Alaska was all done by scuba diving. So, you know, sort of down to 100 feet deep. But then different species of octopuses continue down to very great depths. And so there are some deep sea species that are down at, you know, 1,000 meters or more or deeper. And they're very shallow animals. So they, across the different species, they range from shallow depths to all kinds of deep water. In fact, just this morning, I saw a news article about another discovery of octopuses on one of these deep sea methane seeps. And these are areas underwater that create that shelter.
Oh, right.
And that hard surfaces. And they had found this octopus species that broods its young in those areas. So they lay their eggs and they tend their eggs in those kinds of habitats. And there's only about maybe five or six of these that have been discovered around the world. And this one was right off of the rift off of Washington up to Vancouver Island,
In
that area.
Wow. Hey, what is the difference between a squid and an octopus?
The squids are primarily midwater animals. You know, they're up off the bottom a little bit for the most part, and they often form, not always, but often the species are in schools. And so they're kind of, and they're preying on fish, you know, or things that are in the water column. The octopuses are very bottom-oriented. And so they've oriented the body a little differently, and they hang out down at the bottom, and they are foraging in the crevices and the cracks in the right on the substrate. So that's one of the big differences. And then because the squids are trying to catch fast-moving prey, like fish that can just dart away in the water column, they have two more appendages than the octopus do. Octopus have eight arms. Squid have eight arms plus two tentacles. And the tentacles are specialized for that rapid prey capture.
Wow. We're talking to David Scheel here in the National Defense. His book, Many Things Under a Rock, The Mysteries of Octopuses. And when I was doing my research for the interview, the first thing that comes up, David, from the Daily Mail, divorced marine biologist befriends a pet octopus that lives in a tank in his home, and the inquisitive animal even swims up to watch TV with the family. That's true, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it is. And I also think that the Daily Mail has a penchant for these fantastic sounding headlines, you know?
Right. I mean, it sounds like you swapped your wife for an octopus.
Well, no, it didn't quite happen that way. But the living room was very empty at the time. And, you know, it seemed a film company approached me and said, would you like to do a documentary for BBC and PBS Nature? And I thought, BBC, PBS, that sounds like great company to keep.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've done a couple of other documentaries, but always kind of small things that, they weren't the full blown hour long documentary. And I thought, sure, why not? And the producer came. And he looked at my house, and I said, you know, we could put the aquarium here, we could put it there. He said, in the living room. There's lots of room there. It'll be right in the middle of the house. So we ended up putting the aquarium in the middle of the living room. And, that was kept company with Heidi the octopus for the duration. And, you know, that ended up being released in the U.S. as Octopus Making Contact from PBS. And overseas, it was released as The Octopus in the Living Room. from BBC.
I can't wait to see that now. And you know, I think
it's a lot of fun.
You know, the mark of a great book to me is something that you read that makes you want to find out everything else you can about that topic. And this is one of those books. I mean, you know, I don't start my day out thinking about octopuses, but I mean, to read some of this detail and incredible revelation that you have here is just outstanding. What's the deepest depth that you've ever dived?
Well, I am an open water scuba diver. And so on scuba, I have been down to the open water depth limit, which is about 120 feet or so. And you don't want to go any further than that on open scuba. But in the submersible, I was down in the submersible Delta in Alaska. And the submersible, we went down to, I'd have a look at the records to give you the exact thing, but 200 meters or so.
Oh, wow.
Which is about 600 feet down. So I'm a pretty shallow ocean explorer in my own personal work, because I haven't yet had an opportunity to get down in any of these very deep sea submersibles. But it was a real treat to be able to spend as much time as I have in the ocean, you know, moving around in the environment that these animals live in. There's something about the ocean that, you know, you really need to be immersed in order to fully experience. You know, I wrote to the best of my ability in Many Things Under a Rock. I wanted to immerse the reader. And so I tried to write about that experience of being underwater and what it's like and what you see and what you feel. And so, you know, I tried to capture some of that, but I always tell my students that are going to be marine biologists that, you know, to really understand the ocean world and the ocean life, it's good to spend some time underwater.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you do a great job of capturing that. And I, you know, this is kind of a weird question, but there's a lot of talk these days, especially now in Congress, about, you know, UFOs and aliens and all of these different things that people have seen and videotaped. And do you ever get a sense of that when you're deep in the ocean? I mean, is that, you know, everybody talks about you know, the weird things that happen or have happened in the deep blue. Is that, you ever get kind of that sense that there's something odd going on here?
You know, the underwater realm is otherworldly in the sense that the physics are different, because you're not in air, you're in water. And the octopuses themselves are just astoundingly unusual animals because there's so much about them that has come together in one animal that we don't see combined in those ways in any other group of animals. But I will say there's an immense amount about them that is very, you know, very small watery blue planet. They are deeply linked to all the rest of Earth's biology. And so, you know, some people say, oh, the octopus is the most alien animal you can find. And that might be true, but that doesn't mean it's alien. It's very, very tightly linked to the kind of animal that we are. And I chastise some of that in the book, how much I see that commonality between humanity and even the weirdest animals on the planet are all still deeply connected.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just got to be a fascinating world to explore. And obviously you've been at it for quite a long time. Just another odd question for you, because you live in Anchorage. Are there ticks in Alaska?
You know, I know that ticks carry Lyme disease in much of the lower 48, and there's abundance of wild deer that carry the ticks because of the way humans have transformed the landscape. And so ticks are a huge concern, you know, in much of the country. In Alaska, in the Anchorage area, I don't know if there are any ticks, but we don't have to worry about ticks getting attached and ending up on us carrying Lyme's disease. It's just not a concern in Alaska.
Yeah.
We don't have deer. We do have deer in the state, but we don't have, I don't think I've ever seen a deer in the Anchorage area. Instead, we have moose.
Right.
And so we see a lot of moose.
Well, that's where I'm going to move then, because we live on a horse ranch, so we see the ticks, the deer flies, the horse flies, that, you know, that everything that comes with that. And are octopuses known to be smart?
Well, they have a great reputation for being smart, don't they? I think the octopus smartness is a combination of the fact that they're persistent, like we saw with that octopus trying, you know, eight different ways to open the clam.
Yeah.
So they're persistent. They're very flexible, right? They've evolved to forage in crevices in the coral reefs, and they can get in and out of tight spaces. So they're, they're very persistent, but they're also very flexible, and they're also extremely curious animals. Hmm. And I think, you know, curiosity, persistence, and flexibility, that's pretty much the components of intelligence in anybody I know.
Right. That's absolutely true.
That's what defines intelligence, is you've got to have those traits. And octopuses have them in spades, I think.
Well, it's a fascinating read, and I would encourage anybody who's interested in just learning about new things. Many Things Under a Rock, The Mysteries of Octopuses, David Scheel. Thank you so much for the time, David. Really a great job on your part.
Absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
We'll be right back here on the National Defense.